Hello, I'm Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
And we are...
Mega City Film Club!
Conrad, here we are back 2 weeks later with another film that we've both been to see. We'll just do the very quick Los Angeles weather check.
Actually, it's really nice today, I should say. Sun shining, real bright, actually. It's a good time here at LA. It's hot as heck. We're flexing our air conditioning muscles today, that kind of stuff.
Excellent. Well, talking about flexing muscles, let's take us straight into...
Film One, Fantastic Four, First Steps.
Indeed. Written by Josh Friedman, Eric Pearson, Jeff Kaplan, and Ian Springer. Directed by Matt Shakman. Starring, of course, Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn, and Eben Moss-Bachrach. And... The Fantastic Four, Marvel's first family, are back on our screens again. This is the sort of fourth attempt.
Well, it's the third version of the team that's made it to film. I think the fourth Fantastic Four movie. And then that's not counting the unreleased one from the 90s. And right. Then, you know, because that first one with I always think of it as a Horatio Hornblower, but like Jessica Alba and Captain America and Michael Chiklis or whatever, that one had a sequel too. It had, you had Fantastic Four and then Rise of the Silver Surfer or whatever.
Right. So here we go. We've both been off to see it by ourselves. Your general impressions, Conrad, what did you make of this one?
I thought it was great. I had a good time at the movie. I think they did a good job as a team movie of sort of giving all the different members of the group time to shine and stuff like that. I thought the special effects were really cool, like some really nice, like a lot of space stuff, some big monster fighting stuff and things like that. Yeah, I walked out of the theater having a good time. As time went by after I saw the movie, I feel like this was a shower movie for me, where sort of afterwards I started thinking and things sort of the movie lost some structural integrity as I sort of thought about things more, but definitely initial impression was really good and generally had a good time with the movie.
So I probably should have said mild spoiler warnings. We'll get to those in a minute, that we're going to talk about a few elements of the plot. But before we do that, this is another movie, a bit like Superman, that gets the origin story out of the way with some sort of, not quite on-screen narration, but there's a TV host who basically tells us the origin story. And as you said last time, Conrad, you're fed up watching movies of origin stories. Yes. Get on with it.
No, absolutely. I'm 100% anti-origin story, and I really did like this movie. Yeah, it starts, you know, as you would, 4 years into the Fantastic Four's career, which means that they've got, you know, full mastery of the powers, they've got the costumes, everyone's over the initial angst of their story and stuff like that. Like, you know, I mean, especially because I think the most recent Fantastic Four movie before this one with Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, Kate Mara, that one was very much a Surf Dracula kind of movie, to use the term that I've used here previously. Like, where literally the last line of the movie is like the thing says the word fantastic, and you know, Miles feels like, say that again, like, oh, we're gonna maybe we'll call ourselves the Fantastic Four, and that's the end of the movie. And you know, whereas this one was like, yeah, no, listen, they're the Fantastic Four, they got the powers, they're doing things, like we're even pretty, like the thing's actually like comfortable in his rocky skin for the most part. You know, his subplot is much more like making his way in the world as opposed to sort of, I don't know, self-pitying, what's the, like, this man, this monster sort of thing and stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, Fantastic Four, most famous, of course, for Kirby and Stan Lee in the 60s. And so they have set this film in the 1960s with a sort of space 60s, very cool aesthetic. What did you make of the sort of look and the feel and the sound of this film and the way they've set it?
I thought it was really cool. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. Like this sort of, a future with that still got cathode ray tubes, big square boxy TVs, even in like Times Square or something like that, all these cars with tail fins and things of that nature. Everybody's wearing suits and things. I think does definitely make it feel like it's in a different world, in a different setting. And so you're sort of, and gives it a visual style that I think is really distinctive and stuff. I talked to my dad actually about this movie because he sort of is a normie, basically, like doesn't like know a lot of comic book things, but does watch a lot of these movies, and sort of asked him, like, were you able to get a sense of, like, to the previous thing we were talking about, like sort of what these guys' powers were and what they're able to do, and that this was sort of a different world, not either our world or the world of the previous Marvel movies and stuff. And he said he was able to pretty much get a sense, like figure that out, basically, that sort of this whatever Earth 828 is different than other stuff, which is something I was worried about, just sort of that, like, people wouldn't be able, know what's going on, basically. Like, where have these guys been then? That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to say, what do you think, what did you think about the aesthetic of the film, that this sort of past, futury past kind of setting?
Oh, the aesthetic's lovely. I love the 60s setting. I think they're going to have some slight difficulties cramming this into an Avengers movie. When is it Earth? Did you say Earth 828?
I think so. I think that was a number.
Yeah, Jack Kirby's birthday, I think. Anyway, yes, I love the aesthetic. I love the look. I did have a few more problems with this film than I did with Superman.
Yeah.
And I came away sort of thinking, I'm not sure about
me
this.
Too. For the record, like I said, I came out of it feeling good, but had some, as I think about things, I'm kind of like, I don't know, a little bit.
Well, let's stick with good things for the moment, exactly. Or what I thought was good.
That's
things.
What I'm trying to do here.
Without too many spoilers, I think it's obvious from the trailer that the Fantastic Four are appropriately enough facing the Silver Surfer and Galactus, played by Juliet Turner and Ralph Innes?
Innocent, I think.
Right, Ralph Innocent. I think appropriately enough, this is the giant purple suited with the helmet Galactus treading the streets of New York. More property damage to deal with
and
in this one.
And rapid evacuations of the city also.
Yeah, I know. How many times can you Americans go to the movies to see your skyscrapers topple and rapid evacuation? It is a slightly worrying. But anyway, what did you make of Galactus and the Silver Surfer?
I thought they were both really good, actually. I really like I liked how they made the Silver Surfer, who's sort of the, a lady, Shalabal, if you will, which is a very Jack Kirby sort of name. Well, I guess is the name of the female Silver Surfer and your Norrin Rad's love interest, I guess, from the comics and stuff. But they made her seem like very, like, I loved how, like, cool and aloof, but like sort of angry in the bot, like her characterization of the Silver Surfer I really liked. And just like they make her so fast, I thought that was like the effects of that were really cool. Plus they actually do some surfing stuff, like she does sort of surf like lava and cosmic rays and things like that, which is also pretty neat. If you're gonna do a Silver Surfer, then you might as well have him surf a little bit, And then, I thought Galactus was good, man. Real big. Like, they give you, because he's blowing up, like walking through the city and stuff like that. I did like that they just kind of, like, just how the effects of him, like, just sort of casually knocking over buildings and just being big and ominous was real good. A lot of scenes, I saw it in IMAX, and I think that this was sort of, like having this big, like kind of squarish screen that IMAX has, kind of does a really good job of having like the Fantastic Four sort of like down the bottom right corner of the screen looking small, and then just like in the upper left, like just like the eyes of Galactus appear from the background or something like that, you know. I think, you know, and then just having him just be this, you know, giant sort of techno monster force is really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought the design, the look of Galactus and the Silver Surfer were both great and two great performances. And I'm glad they went with the Kirby suit and the Kirby helmet. Yeah, fantastic. Now, Marvel's First Family does, of course, depend on us liking and sort of enjoying the relationship between the four leads. I did put in our notes that the actors for the Fantastic Four, possibly four of the most charismatic actors currently operating, certainly the sort of like the hottest in terms of, you know, they're in everything at the moment. Did you buy them as the Fantastic Four?
Yeah, I thought they did. I thought it was pretty good. Like, I felt like, you know, that like I think the, you know, the movie is constantly having these little moments where they're joshing each other, where they're like, you know, in like the sort of classic Fantastic Four thing of like the Thing and the Human Torch constantly like ribbing each other and like, you know, making little jokes and having little conversations or something like that, which I thought was pretty, you know, the idea, you know, to sort of make them be brothers basically or something, I thought was pretty good. I, you know, I thought Pedro Pascal and Vanessa Kirby were also really good together. I think they definitely had some really great moments of just sort of giving you a sense of a couple that love each other and sort of have these, you know, but also have these like doubts about the world they find themselves in and stuff like that. And then, yeah, and then I really like a lot of the interactions between all the different characters I thought were really good. I think that really, and I feel like this was something that they were casting for or making it for, like the strength of this movie is, I think, the actors playing the main characters and sort of it's the relationship between the four members of the team and sort of and how like you buy that, I guess, you know, I mean, it's so it's because I watched the Fast and the Furious movies. It's such a cliche, you know, the idea like, you know, it's not a team, it's a family, that sort of situation. But that's still, you know, very, very much the case. And I do feel like they did a good job of having that connection, making you feel like these are, you know, basically real people that like love each other and sort of will like go to great, you know, to great lengths of superheroism to help each other out and stuff like that. And I think that's a really important part of the characters and of making this like a pretty good movie.
I did like the joshing relationship between Ben and Johnny. And I also like the fact that Johnny Storm is not just sort of dumb hot rod racer, particularly that Al Ewing parodied in Zombo.
Yeah.
But instead, he's actually, you know, he can figure stuff out himself. And in fact, I think Reed should have been paying more attention to the work Johnny was doing. But anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
we'll come to Reed Rich.
Yeah, I really agree with that. Also, I really like that they sort of had John, like, Johnny B there solving problems, like doing things, being early in the movie, it's clear that he like wants to go back into space as opposed to doing the superhero stuff and things like that. Like, and just generally like, you know, I think, and my dad, who again saw this movie, sort of made the joke of like, of the four that go up in the space, that go up into space, Johnny seems like the one that's the most like, oh yeah, and my kid brother just didn't have anything to do, so we're putting him in the spaceship today, you know, as opposed to like, oh yeah, well, so like, you know, here's this scientist, here's his genius wife, here's the pilot, here's the genius scientist's kid brother, like, you know, so I think like, having him not just be on fire, I think was a good piece of characterization for him.
Now, Ben Grimm, the Thing, gets moments. You see him on the street more than the others. You know, you see him walking down Yancey Street quite a bit. Natasha Lyonne pops up as a school teacher, I think. Yeah. Although I'm not quite sure what she's doing in the movie, because that relationship that might be developing, well, who knows what's going to happen. But anyway, that was slightly unusual. But I wanted to mention the thing CGI, because obviously one of the problems we've always said about CGI is giving the characters some weight. Mm-hmm. And I do feel that, like, the thing walking down the street, I don't expect to see the sidewalk shattering, but I felt like I wanted a bit more impression that this is a big thing walking down the street.
Yeah.
Literally.
That seems like such the challenge of the Fantastic Four is you have two characters that are really tough to bring to screen in a decent way, in both making Mr. Fantastic stretchy and making the thing not look stupid, basically. I think, like, the look of the thing is good. You know, you sort of get some of these, like, you know, it's in the trailer of just sort of like, you want sort of a good, like, the thing to look good in a fedora and have him kind of be able to look sadly off into the distance and stuff like that. Like, I agree that sort of the thing on the street, like, and there are a couple times where he kind of feels like a dude, I guess, as opposed to a rock man, I think.
Yeah.
The part in the trailer where he's like, where he's like tasting the sauce and stuff like that also. That feels much more like Eben Moss Bacharach's been sort of got a skin over him or something like that, as opposed to like, here's this 800-pound rock man doing in these situations, you know?
Yeah. I put this in our notes because I'm not sure. Are you familiar with the honey monster from the Sugar Puffs adverts over here?
A little bit. I've got right. An idea of it, I think.
So it's a guy in a suit, you know, who plays this sort of giant Muppety character.
Oh, wait, I do remember. Okay, yes. It's coming back to me now. Yes.
And I did get that sort of feeling of, you know, that's just a guy wearing a giant puppet suit of some sort, without much weight to it, walking down the street. But anyway, that was just one of my little quibbles. I mean, otherwise, some of the big cosmic stuff, the space stuff, the, as I said, Galactus and the Silver Surfer, that all works great. We are going to get slightly into spoilers now, because I'm going to have to ask you about the world's smartest man, Reed Richards. Firstly, when they go into space and meet Galactus and the Surfer and then come back to Earth, and when Reed Richards gives a press conference almost immediately and tells the world what Galactus wants.
Yes, this is a misstep, frankly.
The world's smartest man. Do you think you should have told them that, Reed? I mean, I know in superhero movies now, we've got to get the moment where the crowd turn against them and start throwing, you know, throwing cans or bottles at them, which happens, or, you know, jeering them.
I guess, yes, it happened. Like, I got – this is where I start to have feelings about, you know, sort of less positive feelings about the movie and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, I mean, I feel like, you know – If I was re-justifying myself, I guess, I would say that if he hadn't told the people right away that Galactus just wants the newborn Franklin, then it would have been a dramatic moment for the Silver Surfer to reveal it. You're sort of seeding right. that ground to them, to the baddies being in charge of that information, basically.
Right. Okay.
But I would also say that maybe you do that and then say that Galactus is lying, or that's not the offer they made when you were on the ship and stuff like that. It wasn't good. It wasn't a good offer, because it then creates this moral dilemma. And I don't think the Fantastic Four are on the right side of the moral dilemma based on the actions that are then taken and just the general unseriousness of Reed Richards and his solutions to problems.
Okay, so if you don't want to know what Reed Richards' plan to defeat Galactus is, then I would suggest you probably skip the next 5 minutes or so, or maybe, well, a couple of minutes or so of this. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. Reed Richards has, in this movie, just developed teleportation.
Oh, yeah.
As a working concept, which might make us wonder why they need a spaceship and the Quinjet. But anyway, whatever it's called. No, the Fantasticar, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it's called, yes. His plan to defeat Galactus is basically to use all the world's power and energy.
And resources.
Yes, and resources. And teleport the Earth. You know, spoilers, this does not happen, but...
It's a terrible plan, Eamon. One, you're just putting off the you can't teleport all your problems away. You know, it's gonna catch up with you eventually, you know. But two, I don't wanna get Neil deGrasse Tyson on you, Eamon, and talk about the unfeasibility of going to a different solar system and things being exactly the same. But that is not a feasible plan. There's, you know, unique things within the solar system, be it gravity, cosmic rays, the moon, things like that, that are essential to life on Earth in ways that we don't even I feel like we couldn't even really know until they're taken away, almost, you know, you're inviting a host of unintended, like if they had done this, they would basically spend the rest of their lives just fixing the unintended consequences of it happening, I guess.
Yeah.
To say nothing of the fact that if it works and all that kind of stuff, and generally it comes down to what the sacrifice is, you know, I mean, I think, you know, there's a really powerful moment of Vanessa Kirby making the big speech and her tagline of she won't sacrifice her son to save the world, but she also won't sacrifice the world to save her son. And I got to say, if I was out at that speech, then I would say, you know, she would have said that, and boo, give him the kid, you know, but you're telling me that no one's going to die as a result of Earth teleporting multiple, you know, millions of light years away to a planetary system mostly the same as 2% tolerance. That could be significant, you know. And the second that two people die as a result of this action, then it's not a balance of the life you save with Franklin. You know, if the Fantastic Four wants to say that their son is worth more than a regular person, that's cool. I feel like, you know, they can say that, but I think it changes the relationship they have with the rest of the world that we've had up until this point, this sort of, you know, ominous cult-like love that the Earth of 828 has for the Fantastic Four and stuff like that.
It just seemed
because that's the elf in the room, I feel like, of the movie. Yeah. Eamon. People like these Fantastic Four guys too much. And I keep wanting to go to the random people and just be like, hey, if you're in danger, blink twice. They don't have to, you know, we've got other superheroes. They don't have to control you like this, you know?
Just seemed like such, you know, have you thought this through, Mr. Richards? It seems like this is rather a big thing to do. There might be some consequences.
Yeah, they have to do an address to get all the world's resources to do it. They've got to be on energy rationing long enough for the thing to grow a ridiculous beard in the course of it.
Yeah.
I've got a beard myself. It takes that amount of growth takes a little while, you know?
Because he can't use the axe or whatever it is.
The angle grinder or whatever. So presumably we're on candles and stuff like that to build and power these machines, you know, basically this boondoggle that instantly gets messed up, you know, again, like they're all built in cities and then destroyed by the Silver Surfer. So again, untold damage there and stuff. And it's just kind of like, you know, like they're asking me to make these thoughts, you know, they're talking about the ethics of it. So it's not like unfair to kind of be like, well, this is like, again, this is an unserious plan, you know, especially because it seems like you're going from eggs to planets. And like, yes. I don't know that it's just a matter of scale. I would at least like you to like open up the egg and make sure that like it doesn't turn black in there, you know.
Yeah.
If you do it with like an egg with a chicken in there, that the chicken is getting messed up when it hatches or something like that.
It's quite a leap to see him teleport an egg and then say, right, next plan, teleport the entire world millions of light years away. Okay.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, I could have done with a little bit of the Morbius vampire bat with that egg. I want to see what's going on with that thing, you know?
Yeah. Wait. Like, wait a bit. Yeah. Wait. Yeah, you need to sort of like wait a while before you scale up to human testing. Okay. Though
it is very comic book Reed Richards to kind of be like, we need to solve a problem. Like, oh, my latest invention is obviously the thing we'll use to solve it, you know?
that is 60s comic book accurate for Fantastic Four, I guess. Okay, well, welcome back. If you followed the spoiler time codes in the show notes for this episode, where we discussed Mr. Reed Richards being an unserious man. now, we don't normally talk too much about mid-credits and end-credits extras on the podcast. This film has both, a mid-credits and an end-credits. I will say, without too many spoilers, that the end-credits one is just basically as if they'd done a clip from a 1960s Fantastic Four cartoon, Saturday morning cartoon show, and they've just reskinned it with the sort of the likenesses of the current actors.
Yeah, that was the end credits one. On your advice, I didn't stick around for that one. I got it.
Yeah. It's a little bit of sort of cartoon nonsense that really doesn't tell us anything. The mid credits one, of course, sort of gives us a teaser. And in fact, it does say on screen the Fantastic Four will return in Avengers Doomsday. So, and we'd seen this in the end credits or the mid credits sting for Thunderbolts, hadn't we?
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, Thunderbolts ends with the Fantastic Jet, like, sort of flying into the atmosphere and stuff like that, which I will say did up some suspense for me in this movie, because I was sort of like, oh, what if they fail? And, like, they're in Thunderbolts as the last refugees from their Earth or something like that, I guess. In a way, having it be in an alternate universe does make it a little bit low calorie in terms of destroying the world. Like, you could destroy the Fantastic Four's universe and it would be okay. And they just would show up in the mainline MCU or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, not to get back to the spoilers we just talked about a few moments ago, but I did think, is Reed Richards' plan going to unintentionally catapult them into the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
I thought that was a possibility as well, yeah.
Okay, well, the Fantastic Four will return in Avengers Doomsday, which we are building up towards.
Yeah, and there are little teases in the movie. I know, you know, when, as part of the Fantastic Four being ominously popular, they sort of show, you know, all the world's nations disarming. So the Fantastic Four will be the Earth's sole protectors. And there was like a UN stage with a Latveria, an empty Latveria chair there and stuff like that, which is sort of where Dr. Doom is from and things like that.
Yeah. We do see that there is a United Nations, obviously, and that the Latverian ambassador does not attend the United Nations, it would seem. Wonder who. Surprise, surprise. I suppose, you know, we haven't really talked about it, but the Marvel Cinematic Universe has had to do a bit of a sharp left turn to sort of move away from the bad guy Kang, the Conqueror, towards Doctor Doom instead. And, of course, bringing back one of the most, talking about charismatic actors, one of the most charismatic actors in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, yeah, okay. Big things in the future, it would seem.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like, I would like...
Stay too.
Yeah, I would like, you know, obviously I always say I would like these movies to be good. You know, I've got a lot of positive feeling about Robert Downey Jr. Generally, and you know, especially sort of in his Marvel stuff. I'm interested to see sort of just how much he's actually in, you know, as Doom in this sort of Doomsday thing. Like, it's pretty clear that there's going to be something involving some kind of Dr. Doom stuff. Presumably it's going to do something to merge some of these universes we've been teasing, you know, just in terms of bringing Fantastic Fours and X-Men into mainline MCU or something like that. You know, these, so much of this fate of this, you know, this sort of post Infinity War Endgame stuff have been so diffuse, all these different movies, no real sequels or anything like that, but sort of dealing, you know, talking about these multiverses and things like, you know, I'm still waiting for, like, I feel like there's so much stuff being sort of put in action that, like, you know, they're cutting out a lot for them to work with when they get to the actual, like, you know, to this Doomsday movie and stuff. So I guess we'll have to see what it is, I guess.
Okay. So Fantastic Four First Steps, had a good time, but afterwards thinking to ourselves, hang on a minute, that doesn't make a lick of sense, as you Americans would say.
Indeed.
Now, we were, of course, these were the two big summer blockbusters we were most looking forward to, and we were originally going to record, try and do them both in one recording, but we've done them as two separates. Of the two, Superman and Fantastic Four, which one did you prefer?
Superman, 100%.
Yeah.
Superman's way better. I felt like has more of a focus and and purpose, I guess. Like, does it, while there are a lot of like similarities, like you can't help but see similarities between the two movies, you know, whether it's about parental legacy, just the fact that they've got to deal, like, both movies, you have you got to fight a black hole in them, things about sacrifice, about the public loving a character and then turning on them and all this kind of stuff. There's a fair amount of similarities between the two movies, but I would say, Superman clears, as they say, as the kids say these days. I think it's the better of the two movies, and the better time if you have to choose between them, and when you go to the cinema.
Yeah, I would agree. Superman was my favorite by quite a long shot. Yeah. Okay, so that is Fantastic Four First Steps. Now there is going to be, if all things work out, there's going to be quite a few film clubs barreling down as bonus episodes in between my regular book club episodes.
At last. So, it's been a while since we've done one of those, so I'm excited for sure.
If all goes to plan, in 2 weeks after you hear this one, there will be a film club excursion into the world of horror. But that is going to be there's a stunt double coming in for Conrad on that.
Sorry, I'm a scaredy cat, folks. Sorry. don't care for horror all that much.
So hopefully you'll find out who Conrad's stunt double is in 2 weeks after this episode drops. And then we've got some other episodes lined up to do, including a couple of – well, we've got some more Hard-Nosed Cops, and we've also got another – well, we've got a 50th anniversary to try and get to, which we'll perhaps talk about down the line. But anyway, yeah, plenty of film club episodes coming up. Exciting times, Conrad.
That's right, sunshine. Back up there.
So until next time, you can find us, of course, at megacitybookclub.com and at
spacespinner2000.com. Oh, yeah. We're powering through.
Your episode, obviously, we've just recently had your episode about Judge Dredd, Batman, The Ultimate Riddle, and the 95 Stallone movie. And I was listening to your latest episode with Alex this morning. So, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, we're powering through 1995. Hopefully should be done pretty soon, actually. And then hopefully on to 96, and we'll see how it all goes from there.
Excellent stuff. So megacitybookclub.com, spaceminute2000.com. Look in the show notes for the timestamps of the spoiler section of this podcast. And until 2 weeks' time, I'm Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
And we have been
Megacity Film Club.